Want a recipe for success? Step one, visit OCDFamilyPodcast.com/courses. Step two, click on my link to browse OCD Training School's amazing course catalog. Step three, enroll. And step four, enjoy learning. With no added cost to you, you can support the OCD family community while grabbing some continuing education or learning how to bridge yourself to self-help strategies for OCD. Again, that's OCDFamilyPodcast.com/courses. And use my special link to sign up today.
Hey, OCD family community. It's October, which means it's OCD Awareness Month. Woo woo! And have I got a lineup for you. Because this month is all about raising awareness, breaking stigma, and helping people access information, support, and resources for the treatment of OCD. So settle in, fam, because first on the docket is a chat all about meds with the wonderful Dr. Stacy Greeter, MD, and I can't wait for you to hear more.
I'm Nicole Morris, licensed marriage and family therapist and mental health correspondent. And let me be the first to say, welcome to the family. The OCD family, that is. I am here to create a community of support for family members, spouses, partners, parents, adult children, as there may be adult words, and chosen family of OCD sufferers and their community. I've had over 22 years of experience in the mental health field, but please note that this information does not qualify or substitute as a diagnostic evaluation, therapy, or treatment, and it is presented on an as-is basis. Please follow up with a qualified mental health provider in your area regarding concerns for yourself or loved ones. Thank you for joining us today. Now, let's get started.
Okie dokie. Fam, hello. Happy October for those of you catching us in real time. I have to admit, I'm a little bit in denial that it's already October. Sometimes the days can feel really long, y'all, but then the weeks and the months go by in a blink. But we've made it to October, and I'm excited because, as I mentioned at the top of the show, it's OCD Awareness Month. And so to celebrate, I was thinking about four different cornerstones I find to be really important to raising OCD awareness, which includes, but is not limited to, medications to take or not to take. That's often a question. Shakespeare's like, lived experience. So understanding how OCD impacts your warriors, your families, and educating ourselves on such. Our third cornerstone is research, which is really, really important because we know that there are certain evidence-based practices that have reliable and valid outcomes for OCD, but we don't have cures. And while we used to utilize, and you'll still hear some folks regarding first-line treatments, what we're learning is we have treatment options for OCD. And to me, this is fantastic news because just like we're going to talk about a bit later with respect to meds, some can work great for one person and not at all for another. And just like there are different medication options, there are different treatment options for OCD. So we're going to reference exposure and response prevention and inference-based CBT more broadly in today's chat, but I'm really excited because we, as a community, are going to get to learn more about metacognitive therapy this month. And then the fourth cornerstone that I've identified is advocacy. So getting the good word out, taking hope, and bringing information from publications to public squares. And this year, I have the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Stuart Ralph of the OCD Stories coming to hang out with the fam. How cool is that? So we have a really great lineup all month long where I'll be featuring one of these four cornerstones each and every week. And fam, I'll just make a quick plug here that if you end up liking what you're hearing or are enjoying our conversations, please consider writing a 5-star review or following and or subscribing wherever you enjoy your podcasts and YouTube, because if we can engage the algorithm, then more people will find our conversations and be able to access this community of support. Also, I'll just mention that OCD Awareness Week, which is quite the hubbub around these parts, officially kicks off October 13th through 19th. So for any fam catching this episode hot off the airwaves, keep an eye out for all sorts of programming during that week because I guarantee there's going to be so much support, information, fun all week long. And so with all of that being said, welcome to any new fam and to the return fam joining for this episode. I think OCD Awareness Month is so helpful and so powerful because for many, this may be your first time engaging. Perhaps you're just learning about you or your loved one's diagnosis, or maybe you treat OCD and suspect it's rearing its ugly head in your lives or the life of a client, a patient, a family member. And even if you're new to this space, as you learn more about OCD, you'll likely learn you're not new to OCD's wrath. And so there is a lot of learning to take in, and that can feel really overwhelming. With that in mind, my object today is to discuss how and when to consider something like medication support or pharmacotherapy as part of you or your loved one's treatment plan. And so I invited the amazing Stacey Greeter, MD, who is a pediatric and adult psychiatrist who owns her own group practice in Sarasota, Florida. Stacey has an insatiable curiosity and infectious enthusiasm for psychiatry and teaching. She employs metaphor and engages in storytelling to help make complex psychiatric concepts relatable and entertaining through her psychoeducation fan fiction videos. Fan fiction. Fam, I kid you not, you are in for a treat. So we are incredibly lucky to have the good doc's time and knowledge bringing us insights and ultimately awareness about OCD. I'll just remind the fam, though, as stated in the intro, this isn't therapy, and Stacey isn't your doctor. But let's practice being curious together, and if something sounds familiar or is worth investigating more, please reach out to a doctor and/or a mental health provider in your area. Additionally, I'm going to provide a brief trigger warning that we're going to mention suicide and converse about an all-too-common traumatic hospitalization scenario. So please just be mindful and use your discretion. But do join us if you're able to, because there are so many good tips and guidance to consider when navigating you or your loved one's OCD journeys. So without further ado, let's get to chatting. Well, welcome back to the OCD Family Podcast, and I am so delighted today because we, family, have, you're kind of a unicorn, Stacey.
A rainbow unicorn.
I love that, a rainbow unicorn, because when we find not only someone that is a pediatric and adult psychiatrist, but someone that understands and really knows OCD, it is such a treat and a pleasure. So today we have Stacey Greeter, MD, with us, and welcome to the OCD family community.
Thank you so much, Nicole. Yes, I am autistic and ADHD and OCD, child, adolescent, and adult psychiatrist. And my autistic special interest happens to be psychiatry as well as fantasy creatures. So I love to make fantasy things. Educational psychiatry presentations.
Yes. And I love that because not only is it engaging, but I think it's such a creative and relatable way of communicating and educating through the storytelling. So I love that.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yes. And stories allow us to bring light to painful, vulnerable things with some humor and I think a deeper understanding.
Yeah. Well, and so many people with lived experience of OCD, as we learn from an inference-based CBT lens, are powerful storytellers, and they are able to really...
Because of that imagination.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
And so I love the emphasis and the ability to tell through stories. And I think it helps kind of break down some of the stigma that people feel very anxious sometimes talking about medication, mental health, different struggles, especially when we think of some of the theme of the content of these intrusive thoughts or obsessional doubts, right? And so being able to break through it in a way that makes it understandable and digestible, yet still empirically based or researched based for newer fam joining us. And so I'm thrilled to have you here today. And so I've been talking with a number of different researchers, therapists, practitioners in our field, and I'm always curious as to how people start to really understand and kind of zoom into a specialty like OCD. And I know that you treat a spectrum of disorders, but you also present at IOCDF. And so I know you treat more than just OCD, but how did you come into a fuller understanding of OCD? Because again, the unicorn specialty here that not everybody does. So how did you end up learning so much about OCD?
Good question. Okay, the story, my story. So I had people talking about ICBT and how cool it was, and I wanted to learn ICBT. And being ADHD, I do serial deep dives into various psychiatry topics. My husband lovingly calls me. He said I was going through an OCD tornado at one point where I was consuming all the OCD information. And then I'll move forward and I'll be on, you know, a religion and psychiatry tornado. So I was going through my OCD tornado phase and collecting everything I could to understand OCD and update myself on OCD and then turn it into a Lord of the Rings themed presentation and then a separate dragon themed presentation. So for me, the learning process and the teaching process are really linked.
Yeah.
I'm learning and I feel like it has more meaning to me and I can internalize it better by teaching it. I think I had always had more interest and more maybe motivation for OCD, to do good OCD treatment because of being OCD myself. And it's so common. But really, during that time was when I discovered IOCDF and got connected more to the OCD community.
Yeah. And can I ask, to the degree that you're up for sharing, when did you discover that you had OCD? Was it something that you discovered in adulthood, or was it something that you knew since adolescence or younger?
So I had childhood onset OCD. And the symptoms I had in childhood have definitely shifted. Very, very different kind of OCD target in adulthood.
Yeah.
I'm not sure when I actually knew it was OCD, because as a child, I didn't know it was OCD.
Right.
And it was shifting through my lifetime. As a child, it was more, oh, do this thing or something terrible will happen. For example, right, there will be no afterlife and you'll just be dead. Okay. And then it shifted over time in my life. I remember with my ADHD, which is common, right? I leave the stove on and then I have OCD checking the stove over and over again. There was a time in my residency program in training where we had a huge like number of suicides at once. And then I had some OCD about, did I ask correctly whether they're suicidal? Was there anything in me that might have discouraged them from telling them the truth? What if I ask them again, they might give me a different answer, flavor of OCD. At what age I realized I was OCD? I mean, maybe not until I was a teenager, I think, was I exposed to information about OCD.
Yeah. I just find it interesting as I have lived experience as well. And I was well into, I had a specialty before learning really more about OCD. And then once I started treating OCD and diving into that more, I was like, you know what, actually, I think what I'm dealing with is deeper than, say, generalized anxiety.
It's interesting.
Yeah. So I think it's interesting because that statistic out there, and this is OCD Awareness Month, so the statistic out there is that it can take anywhere from 14 to 17 years for a lot of people to discover they're dealing with OCD. And I would say, you know, for myself, it was maybe 30 years because I had a childhood onset in hindsight. Then I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, that's OCD. But a lot of us aren't figuring that out until we've gone through some time. And so I love that you have this understanding and professionally we're able to really zoom in and learn more about OCD. And now you're providing more information out there. And so as we start, because it is OCD Awareness Month, I know that we're going to have some new listeners joining us, some new family here that are going, okay, so I'm overwhelmed, first of all, in learning more about the profile of what OCD is. And I'm also overwhelmed. Do I go to a psychiatrist? Do I go to a psychologist? When do I need to reach out for treatment? And there are a lot of different questions that bubble up for folks. So first of all, can we just do a real simplistic, and I know it kind of depends on what framework you're working from a behavioral or a cognitive framework, but can we do an overview? What is OCD? And then we can dive into when might we expand and looking for more resources.
Okay, so back to basics, huh?
Yes, because we will have some basics. Some people are going to be like, yeah, we know these basics. Other people are going to be like, I
keep the basics brief then. So OCD, a brain-based disorder where you have intrusive thoughts that are sticky and they feel real. They're laden with really painful emotions. So they then create a whole narrative story in your mind that tells you you have to do a thing, a compulsion, to try to temporarily get some relief from the fear caused by the intrusive thought. And then they come back and it repeats.
Right.
And you often realize that they are irrational, but they feel so real and so scary.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And so when we're dealing with OCD, and whether you're, again, fam, whether you're new with us or whether you've been around for a hot minute here, our objective today is really to understand when or why medication, especially if it's, you know, a brain-based disorder, how can medication be a part of the support or even solution in terms of treatment? And so when we think about medication, and particularly, I think it's also a hard journey for adults sometimes to even be open to medication, but I find particularly for parents, often the idea of medicating our kiddos can be intimidating. It can feel stigmatizing. There can be a lot of big feelings around it. And so in recognizing the profile of OCD, when might it be beneficial for a parent to consider, would medication be a helpful treatment strategy to add to this mix?
So I think that something to keep in mind is that when you go to see a psychiatrist, you are going to get information from them to help you make hopefully a values-based rather than fear-based choice regarding medication, and that's up to you. Just simply seeing a psychiatrist doesn't mean you have to be completely sold on medication. You're there getting almost like a consultation to get info. So keeping in mind, the autonomy is always on parent or patient about the decision to take medicine. And then my role as a psychiatrist is to give you a real good in-depth overview of the pros and the cons. The vast majority of people live more fulfilling lives on medicine for OCD. It does really help people do the work of therapy with, I would say, it really is kind of like a lubricant for the hard work of therapy.
Right.
And can decrease that level of crisis point anxiety to the point that it is manageable enough to really face the exposures that are required of OCD. OCD treatment, powerful and effective, but really, really, really hard.
Very hard, yeah.
We ask our patients very challenging things. We ask a lot of someone's courage when we ask them to try a new medicine and when we ask them to do exposure therapy. So I'm encouraging people to try all the resources at their disposal. And if a medicine doesn't work for them, they can always stop it. I say, you're dating the medicine, not marrying it. You know,
I love that, dating the medicine.
Or if you're a parent and it does something you don't like to your kid, well, then stop the medicine.
Right.
It's hard to, because I think people are always, when they're thinking about pros and cons in medicine, they're always comparing medicine to health. They're not comparing risks and benefits of medicine to, well, risks and benefits of ongoing, not fully treated OCD with the stress response and the developmental delays that can happen because a child isn't engaging with their world and their social relationships. And to really look at both those things when we're making these decisions.
Yeah.
Our OCD population in particular is going to be very big on control and trying to gain control. And I think for a lot of people, medicines represent an absence of control.
Yeah.
So I think it's really important to talk about how medicine helps people gain control, can help you more easily let go of an intrusive thought or more easily identify an intrusive thought as an OCD thought.
Yeah. I tend to think in analogies, and an analogy that I will often give people with the informed disclaimer that I'm not a doctor, so I'm always doing this in bridging with, let's have you talk with your doctor.
I do have a Star Wars presentation about how therapists can talk about meds. To get people to take meds.
I love it. Well, you tell me how I do on this one. And if it needs tweaking, I'm happy to tweak. But I tell them, you know, imagine you're in a car and you're trying to drive somewhere and you're trying to think about something and the noise coming out of the stereo is so loud, right? And you're trying to work through whatever, through life, through driving, through getting what you need to do. And the noise is just overwhelming, right? Talking with the doctor, going and considering something like medication support
adding that to our therapeutic treatment plan can help reduce some of the noise, the intensity that is filling the space. I think there's a big fear that it's going to turn people into someone they're not or someone else.
Yeah.
And I try to say, no, you get to be more of you if this noise isn't really kind of stalling you because it's so intense. And so could that be helpful? Is it worth even having a conversation with a doctor? I think it's worth having a conversation. It doesn't mean you have to commit to it.
Yeah. And so they need it out.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not that you can't do life with that noise so loud. In some ways, it's accumulated over time and you've managed thus far. But do you have to? I think a lot of times, once that noise is down, people are like, well, this feels a lot better because I have more just space to feel.
Which gives you more agency.
Yes, yes. Gives a lot more agency. So that analogy, it rates okay on the scale?
Yeah.
Great.
So I think that's a good analogy. I think one analogy I use, because it's tricky, because we want to give, we're balancing between explaining how key and important and effective the medicine is and how key and important and effective the patient's role in their choices, their work in therapy is too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because we never want the impression to be like, oh, it's all medicine or, oh, it's all, you know.
Right.
The whole picture. I use an analogy of being stuck at the bottom of a lake. And everybody's like, you got to swim to the surface. But there's an invisible weight on you. And that the medicine here is taking the weight off, like giving you that more agency.
Yeah.
But the therapy, the finding meaning and purpose in your life, the getting regular sleep, the exercise, all those things that the patient is in charge of, right? Yeah. Is the swim to the surface.
Right.
So that we are cultivating that internal locus of control while expressing the importance of the medication and effectiveness of it.
Yeah. I've had this conversation a lot, especially in the conversations and advocacy around neurodivergent affirming care. And something that blossomed out of a series I did with Dr. Jeremy Schumann, who's fantastic. I love Jeremy, was talking about this liberation-oriented treatment. We need to be able to have the choice and the access, right? But we can't force that choice on someone else, whether it's medication, whether it's therapy. But we do have a little more freedom to swim to the surface if you don't have that weight holding you down. We do have more freedom to choose different avenues if we have that weight off of our chest. And so medication can be a really helpful supplement. There's research out there that has compared medication and therapy alone in the treatment, particularly with exposure and response prevention, which is one of our evidence-based practices. And both can be very effective. Sometimes ERP can be more effective, but I think often having that noise down, again, I kind of go back to that car analogy, and I just think a lot of times it's going to be easier to do our thing if we're feeling not tethered down, to combine those two analogies with that weight. So I think it's a really important point. And so in terms of describing what kind of medications are considered, especially, again, for people new or maybe they've had this disorder for a long time, their loved one has had this disorder, but they're overwhelmed by the thought of medication. They don't know much about it. Google isn't a great... It can give you lots of information, but it's not always the right information. So what kind of medications are commonly prescribed for OCD? And would love to also, with that, I think a lot of fears around side effects. And so can we talk about what that looks like in having this consultation with a doctor about starting a medication?
Sure. And I can also give some resources, too, for people who want to come in really informed about medication to their first appointment.
Sure.
So selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors are first line. Mm-hmm. It'll be complicated if you have bipolar disorder. Additionally, then SSRIs will not be first line,
right,
for example. And then we're usually, you know, the very key point is that the regular dosages that people use for treating major depressive disorder or generalized anxiety disorder are much lower than the dosages that are needed to treat OCD. And to be aware of that. And I have some tables that Nicole could send out where you see the maximum doses of for OCD medicines.
Can I pause you right there real quick?
Sure.
Because I will often refer clients to the IOCDF. Mm-hmm. I think there's like a blog post that shows a medication table.
I've heard there's some resources there too. Yes.
Yes. And so part of what I think is hard for people is hearing that they go, well, if I have to go on medication, then I'm going to have to go on a ton of medication, which isn't necessarily the case. You know, our bodies metabolize things differently.
Right.
That's why you're working with your doctor and seeing what's the right dose for you. But because research has shown that sometimes we need these higher levels.
Yes.
It can also be like, pun intended, a hard pill to swallow, thinking about going up to such a high dosage. And so, again, if you're sitting here listening to this conversation and you're like, what? So maybe I would even have to go on high levels? Maybe, maybe. But first, let's just talk about what these medications do, how to know if it's working. And in time, we'll figure out the right dosage. Wouldn't you want to be on the right dosage ultimately? But having that conversation. So what advice, if any, would you have for folks going, oh, I'm really intimidated by hearing that it might need to be a high dosage?
Yeah, I think explore what high dosage means to them. Mm-hmm. Does it mean that their brain is going to get messed up? Is there a fear that it's going to be harder to get off the medicine? Mm-hmm. Is it a fear that it means they're particularly weak mm-hmm. because it's a high dose of medicine? There's something underneath that. Mm-hmm. You know, it as a physician, scientist, right? We're like, well, it's fine. The high dose of medicine is fine. We've got lots of data that it's fine. It's not dangerous. It's cool. Right.
Okay. Right.
But that doesn't address what going on medication really means to a patient.
Right.
And going on medication may symbolize weakness, deficit, loss of control. What if I'm dependent on it? So many things at play. So I think it's really good to explore with people what their fears are.
Yeah.
So that they then can name it and be like, okay, rationally, I may know that I may have side effects at a higher dose. I may not. I mean, who knows, right? Like anything. Emotionally, every time my doctor increases my medicine, I feel like a failure. And I recognize that. And then we can work with that. We can process that. We can address that. Mm-hmm. And correcting a lot of common misconceptions that the medicine's not addictive. A lot of people are able to come off the medicine. Mm-hmm. That actually, if you treat more fully to remission, then you have a better chance of coming off the medicine versus staying on a lower dose and a partial treatment of your OCD.
Right.
So I think those are important things to bring up with people.
Yeah. And there's particularly within different cultural intersections too, there is a very sordid history with how medication has been experienced within the community, abusive practices and the ethical issues from past mm-hmm. experiments. I know this comes up a lot in the Black community. And
so do you know, there's studies that show that the Black community is much, much more likely to experience a nocebo effect on medication. You know what nocebo effect is? Nocebo is side effects to a placebo pill. So communities who are disenfranchised or who are used to being potentially harmed by people in positions of authority are much more likely to experience and expect harm from a medication and will side effects from a placebo pill.
Yeah. Well,
so that it affects minority groups.
And it makes sense in terms of the power of different stories and history, right?
Yeah.
You know, a lot of conversations I've had with folks have included talking about one of the more cited experiments that gets cited is the syphilis study that happened. And it is an important consideration. And not even an important consideration, but a very validating and necessary consideration when we're thinking about needing something like medication and understanding that stigma extends beyond what are my own personal beliefs, but what is my history even?
What does my family think about me taking medicine?
Absolutely. Yeah.
A lot of also, what has their relationship been like with past people prescribing their medication?
Right.
What is their medical trauma?
Right. Yeah.
And their primary attachment figures will impact how they view their doctor and the medicine their doctor prescribes.
Right. And how we function through things, whether we perceive them as mental health issues or just family issues? Do we take this outside of our even family circle? We talk about this a lot because it's OCD family community, right? Like, family has a huge impact, and that is absolutely shaped by our culture, which is a beautiful thing. But it also is a challenging thing because history has been challenging, to say the least, in terms of the evolution of medical care. And so having those considerations, I always like to acknowledge that for anybody listening going, yeah, but I couldn't even, like, the stigma isn't even the right word. That would be wrong to go to the doctor, wouldn't it? No, we don't have to say it would be wrong. However, we need to respect what are our values around this conversation, kind of just circling back to what you were saying earlier. What is the impression that if I need a medication, what does that mean for me? Whether it's seen as a failure, whether it seem as a betrayal and going outside of how things are supposed to be handled. And so there's a lot of rich, important details in that conversation that I like to highlight.
Yes. Yeah.
And so when we're thinking about SSRIs, and you were describing it can go to higher doses, can you help us understand the importance and the role that serotonin has in what's happening in the OCD brain?
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, I'll be frank. It's very complicated.
Yeah.
There are actually 12 different subtypes of serotonin receptors that will do different things if they're located on the cell in different ways. And so we have lots of hypotheses about exactly how an SSRI works to treat, but we don't know for sure.
Yeah.
The brain is extremely complicated. Fair. I find that a lot of patients are asking me exactly how the medicine works. And I think the question is more, is this medicine going to harm my brain?
Yeah.
Yes. Now it's true. Yes, they are acting on serotonin, but exactly how that action on serotonin produces a healing response is, there are hypotheses, okay, but hard to know for sure.
Yeah.
And we do find that, interestingly, people can respond faster to SSRIs for OCD than they do for depression, but tend to need higher doses. And it varies a lot from individual to individual. Mm-hmm. I try to focus in more on expected benefit of taking the medicine.
Yeah.
Asking someone, okay, let's say on the best OCD medicine ever, 6 months down the road, how is your life different? What are you looking for? And then explain that if the medicine is working well, it should feel like you have more freedom where anxious thought can enter your mind and you can let it go more easily. Like, you feel a little more confidence that an OCD thought is irrational, that intensity of the anxiety and the feeling of realness of the OCD thought isn't so high, and that you bounce back more easily from a really stressful thing. It's kind of like the goal is like, wow, this is stressful and hard, but I can handle it.
Right.
To summarize.
That rebound. Yeah. The ability to be able to kind of get back into your value-driven life and not feel as absorbed into OCD's imagined possibilities that happen within OCD. Yeah. And so in terms of that process, again, some people are going to be very familiar with it, some aren't, of finding what's the right medication and what's the right dose for any given person. Mm-hmm. That is a process.
It's trial and error.
It's trial and error.
I mean, I also think two people, same diagnosis, same family, same medicine can have opposite experiences. So that's hard. There's a lot of ambiguity to have to tolerate when you're starting a medicine.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And for some of our older patients, in terms of folks experiencing side effects too, I think there's a lot of fear around things like weight gain, impact on their sexual arousal or their sexual functioning.
And so you can do stuff for sexual side effects. So you don't just have to like live life without orgasms. So, you know, there's buspirone augmentation will help with the sexual side effects. I commonly use Cialis and it works for both men and women about an hour before sex. And I think those are some of the greatest options we have. So I think people, and this is for all meds, don't settle. If you have a side effect, talk about it, see what can be done instead of just quitting the medicine, because there can be options. If you have a medicine that you're like, it's good, but You know, don't settle. Think about augmenting with something, right? Like, I really think that you deserve to have a medicine that gives you the best outcome.
Yeah. And, you know, again, exploring those values underlying taking the medication, because sometimes people are like, well, if I had to take on another medication, then that's two pills. And now it's, you know, or whatever the situation is. And so, again, you don't have to have these conversations just with yourself. You can have this relationship and this conversation with your doctor.
Yeah.
That is the person who's there for you to be able and understanding your specific body, your specific treatment to be able to help guide you through that process. But that does also bring up one of the things you were like, you can ask the prescriber, and my philosophy is on teaching. We get a wide variety of different experiences with prescribers. And so some people feel very able to communicate that. Some folks are going to have fears about, am I able to say something back or disagree with the prescriber? And then we're also going to have prescribers that are like in and out, and you feel like a notch on their belt. They have a 15-minute window, see you next month, or see you in a couple months, see you in a year. And so they're
Yeah, it's very hard to advocate for yourself as a patient in the healthcare system for so many reasons.
Yeah. So one of the things you can do is being really informed, like you were saying in the beginning, there's some resources in terms of how you can go into that appointment. But do you have any other kind of resources, too, that you would recommend on how to advocate for yourself? Because it can feel like
I made a list called How to Win at Being a Psychiatric Patient.
Okay.
That I can send to you.
Yeah, I'd love that.
Because it's sort of the culture of medicine that people are just supposed to know what to do. No, you don't know what to do. Patients don't know exactly their role as patients, and don't blame patients for not knowing their role as patients when you haven't explained it to them exactly. How are you most effective as a patient? And so, like, I'll have a chart that'll say, like, okay, so, you know, doctors, expert in medication selection, medication dosage. Patient is expert in side effects, their subjective experience, their goals, the decision to take medicine. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Definitely the ideal doctor-patient relationship is one in which the patient feels very safe disagreeing with the doctor. Mm-hmm. Because how are you going to grow in a relationship if there cannot be some disagreement there, some teaching on both sides? And I tell my patients, I may be the expert in OCD, but you're the expert in yourself.
I was just
like,
thinking,
your experience.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping, I know that it's hard because there are doctors who are totally loving questions and engaging, and there are some who are not.
Right.
It's a mixed bag, unfortunately.
Right.
And so because the culture of medicine is such that the doctor's supposed to have a right answer. And if they don't have a right answer, they're a bad doctor, which is bonkers. Because these things are complex and ambiguous. And we always need to be ready to embrace being wrong in any doctor-patient encounter.
Yeah. And, you know, it just goes back to what you were saying before, even with medication, where it's a trial and error thing, right? You need to be able to try something. Not dissimilar from the scientific method, where it isn't like a failure on anyone's part if that didn't work. We just learned that wasn't the most effective treatment. And for folks, it can feel really scary and daunting to be like, I need to go through trial and error to figure this out. But isn't life somewhat trial and error, even outside of medication? Yeah, we're just kind of trying to figure
out. I know.
Yeah.
And when you are able to safely disagree with your doctor, and it's a good doctor, the relationship really deepens.
Right.
It's therapeutic.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Just the power of being heard, not only being able to speak into a situation, but being heard and then having that reciprocity is core. Yeah. To any relationship success, let alone relationship success around medication. And so when we think about this, and again, having this be OCD Awareness Month, we're going to have some folks that may be tuning in because they discovered that their family is dealing with OCD after perhaps a traumatic hospitalization. Maybe somebody was having such intense symptoms and such intense fear and difficulty sleeping, et cetera. It could be a lot of different things. Maybe they went through a recent hospitalization. In which case, often, people are put on high doses of certain medications and discharged with the linkage to a doctor on the outside going, let's get you in the right ongoing medication. This got you out of the hospital. Let's get you into the maintenance plan of your medication. So we'll have people coming out kind of in a zombie effect of hospitalizations, trying to maybe for the first time meet with a prescriber and go, okay, well, this isn't the ongoing medication I'm supposed to be on. Is it at the same dose? And it can just be kind of a tricky situation. So in terms of clients, whether they've been on medication previously or not, that have gone through hospitalization and are trying to sort out what is the right medication management for me ongoing, would you have any tips or advice in terms of navigating that?
Okay. So the question is navigating when someone is coming out of the hospital and starting outpatient psychiatry for the first time?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Or even resuming outpatient psychiatry. Maybe they were on medications before, but they're on different doses of medication now that they're saying, and the family may be reporting, like, this isn't the version of the family member we've known. This is a very
sleepy, lethargic.
Yeah.
Okay. I understand.
Okay.
So basically they came out sedated and not liking their medicine.
Yes.
Okay. So it's true because on psychiatric units, they have a time crunch to dampen things down and get you discharged as soon as possible.
Right.
So it's going to be very different. And the medication, they generally are using a lot more medications and adjusting them more quickly.
Right.
For that purpose. We have to be humble and recognize that, okay, you know, we love to be off these meds, but they did to something that stabilized inpatients. So we need to be careful and slow. I think looking at each medicine, putting it on trial, say, like, should we keep this one or should we fire it? What is it doing for us?
Mm-hmm.
And if it's not doing a lot for us, the side effects are worse than the benefits, then let's fire it. Slowly taper it, right?
Right.
Okay.
And under the direction of your doctor. Not firing on your own. Fire with your doctor.
Yes. And, you know, I'm privileged because I don't take insurance. I can meet with my patients for an hour and 45 minutes for my initial assessments and do at least 30 to 60 minutes for my follow-ups so that we can process these things in more depth and detail. And I just want to recognize that it is tough because you go into that appointment often based on our unfortunate, you know, capitalist society. And when things are insurance driven, it's a numbers game to see as many people as possible as fast as possible, right?
Okay.
So you go into an appointment with very limited time. Some ways to advocate for yourself is to go in with a list of medications, the dosages, what you loved about the medicine, what you hated about the medicine, and past medications, what you loved about the medicine, what you hated about the medication. As much stuff in writing as possible to communicate, and then to keep an ongoing, I have sheets that patients use, an ongoing record. When you change a medicine, you're writing down, oh, I had this side effect, I don't like it.
Right.
Or, ooh, this did this to me, I liked that. To be able to give as much feedback as possible to the psychiatrist to advocate for the right medicine.
Yeah.
Even, which is hard, I understand, like the short appointments of the insurance-driven industry.
You know, it's interesting too. I would imagine that ongoing record and sometimes tracking things can get complicated and be overwhelming and a struggle for some folks. But I think that could probably feel really validating too, because you would understand what this different layer, this new medication, this different dose might be contributing to how you're feeling. Sometimes you're on certain medications, you're like, well, I don't know which one is doing what, right? And so having that record helps you understand, like, oh, I felt this difference here. And also, again, to emphasize the importance of having the communication with your doctor, even if you don't know which one of these is causing the side effect, your doctor is really knowledgeable in understanding these side effects and the
Do you think people are reluctant to talk to doctors about side effects? Am I getting that feel, Nicole?
I think that not always, but I think sometimes there is the, I don't know what's causing it. And so you can have that conversation with your prescriber and they can know, or have a pretty good educated guess.
Yeah, a good hypothesis, yeah, right?
A good educated guess on what it would be. But I think sometimes, especially coming out of, you didn't know you were dealing with OCD, you ended up in this hospitalization, this was really, really hard. Maybe you were even hospitalized for something like suicidal ideation when really you were just having intrusive thoughts about, what if I commit suicide? I mean, that can happen quite a bit.
Yeah, there's a lot of misunderstanding. It's really sad.
It's a lot of misunderstanding. So folks come out of that and they can sometimes
traumatized, by the way. Yes.
And can have a difficult time because in the chart it says, they were suicidal. They're on these medications. Now we need to consider this path. And people bring up side effects in their very short aftercare appointment and sometimes feel like kind of written off, dismissed, you know, like you don't know what you're talking about. So it's not even about not being able to share the symptoms, side effects, but the Well, this is your problem. So you need to deal with that.
And I think we need to acknowledge that if you ask a doctor a question or disagree and they get defensive, or you bring up a side effect and you get dismissed, that that is on the doctor, not you. That's not because you did something weird or didn't communicate appropriately. And a lot of, you know, this is not an excuse, but I will say that a lot of doctors are burned out.
Right.
And a lot of doctors, there's just so many things asked of them within a time crunch that are humanly impossible. And are also traumatized from their own medical training to maybe not be able to reject things that they can't figure out or can't treat. Mm-hmm. And I could go on and on, but just understand it's painful and it's not okay, but try not to take it personally that it's not you.
Well, and, you know, just even having some of that insight, family, from, you know, sometimes our side of going into that situation. Much like Stacey and I were describing earlier, this isn't often when OCD first showed up on the scene. This is when it reached a certain fever pitch and maybe went through this hospitalization experience. Maybe there were some misunderstandings around what was even happening for your loved one. But we're probably burnout too, right? Even if it was just this acute experience that felt really overwhelming and traumatizing, we can feel burnout too. And so we can sense their defensiveness. We can feel defensive. We're like, what do I do? But we feel a little beholden to and tethered to them now because we're on this different medication or high dosage of a medication that needs to be managed through them. And so, again,
it's scary for you to not, I mean, we have a lot of responsibility because we make medicine decisions and sometimes we make the wrong decision because we have no idea how it's going to impact someone until we actually prescribe the medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And it's painful and it's scary. Not knowing for sure and that being scary can lead to doctors being uncomfortable with being wrong, mm-hmm. understandably. And unfortunately, you need to be very comfortable with being wrong to be in a healthy relationship with your patient.
Yeah.
And that's where the invalidation, unfortunately, comes from.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, family.
I don't know if that made sense.
No, it did.
Did it make sense?
It did.
Okay.
It made sense to me. And if you're hearing this and you're going, okay, so what can I do with this? Again, you know, similar to what we were talking about before of like understanding what your values, your thoughts around medication are. We can also think about how do we feel about having a doctor and being able to tell them that they're wrong, right? Or, you know, maybe sometimes we're wrong too. We don't
also
picture.
I mean, also I'm saying ideally, yes, you have a great relationship. You can be like, no, I disagree with you. And your doctor can be like, yeah, I disagree with you because of da da da. But a lot of times you don't.
Right.
And you have to use the doctor who takes your insurance and they're a specialist and you don't get to pick any other doctor. So you may have to just, for some situations, it's always more important to get your healthcare needs met than it is to be right.
Yeah.
So if you have to leave your pride outside the door, don't get into a debate with a defensive doctor. Do what you need to do to get your healthcare needs met. That is your number one priority. Because I hear you, there's the ideal doctor-patient relationship, and then there's sometimes what has to happen because of what is available to them.
Right. Yeah. So what I'm going to tell you, family, similar to the philosophy that Stacey here was sharing about her passion about educating around these things. and how we were like, she was a unicorn. But she does a lot of teaching and informative videos through her YouTube channel. And I'm going to have links over at OCDFamilyPodcast.com. If you go to this episode's blog, I'm going to hook you up with whatever resources that Dr. Greeter has said she would send over. I'm gonna let you see over there, but also provide links to her YouTube channel and even learning more about how does OCD work? How do medications work? How does this differentiate or present for somebody that maybe is autistic? And, you know, are we trying to kind of dampen down somebody just being themselves? And so if you have questions about some of these things, one of the best things we can do is try to educate ourselves. And if we don't have a doctor that is understanding that we feel like we can trust with this, just getting some really good information that is out there, and Dr. Greeter, as well as IOCDF and other resources, can be a great way to help kind of educate yourself so that when you go into that session, you can advocate. Hey, I learned about this. I want to consider this. And like you said, Stacey, ultimately the goal is around getting your healthcare needs met. So if you're not getting your needs met, then if there's another doctor in network that maybe is going to hear you.
I think you can never not benefit from a second opinion, honestly.
Yeah.
And I also wanted to mention something you brought up, that medication should always be there to give you greater access to your full range of emotions and yourself, not to dampen you down. Yeah. Medicine does have side effects. Mm-hmm. And if your medicine is there dampening you down, don't assume that, this is what I have to deal with. I really think there are definitely going to be some side effects that you may have to put up with. Don't get me wrong, but I think that it should give you as much agency and full access to your emotions as possible.
Yeah. And so also just kind of combining that with the importance of then keeping that journal or that documentation for yourself, even to go like, is this helping me more than it's not helping me? And being able to communicate that with your prescriber. Sometimes, especially when we think of something like an SSRI, and especially when people are starting out on it, you feel more of the negative side effects than you feel positive benefits from, right? And just weaning onto a medication. So a lot of people starting with an SSRI might go, I might have some GI upset, or I might have headaches and I'm not feeling any better yet.
Right.
And so can we describe too, sometimes there are some more temporary side effects.
Yeah, a lot of side effects are temporary. Sometimes the sexual side effects are ongoing while you're on the medicine until you get off the medicine. But usually things like stomach upset, insomnia, headaches are temporary. It really depends.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of medicines to try. Saying meds don't work for me because you tried one medicine is kind of like walking into Publix and getting a bad apple and saying all the food in Publix is bad. But it's frustrating and hard to try different medicines. It really is.
Right. Yeah. And it's a challenge if you've had a negative side effect, maybe already coming from a standpoint of feeling very, very vulnerable, even experimenting with medication, all the more important that you can communicate that with your doctor and let them know like what you're experiencing around that and understanding how your value is also contributing to that. Because like you said, even which was really interesting for the, you said nocebo side
effects? Yes. The nocebo is when you have side effects to a placebo pill because you expect it to cause you harm. Whereas placebo is when you have benefit from a placebo pill because you expect it to cause you benefit.
Yeah.
So our expectations definitely matter.
Well, and it's a great reminder on how powerful our brains are, too. Because if you
go very powerful
with a medication that is not a placebo and you expect it to do harm, and you experience a hard side effect, we can sometimes zoom in even more to see this is what I was afraid of coming true. And so it's super important to be able to, again, be able to talk with your doctor about that. Understand even, you know, do I have a perception that doctors have my best interest at heart, and being really honest with that process. And so this has been a super helpful conversation. Yeah. And one of the things I talked about with Stacey before we came on was a roundabout of a lot of different interests I have in the intersection with the autistic community. And she was like, you know what? I could come back sometime and even have a follow-up conversation. So I think...
Happy to.
Yeah, thank you. I would love to have that ongoing conversation in the future, and we'll talk more about that at another time. But I super appreciate you taking the time coming in today.
Thank you for inviting me, Nicole. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you for that. Okay, fam. I love learning along with you, and I'm so incredibly grateful for Stacey's time and willingness to hang with the fam.
I don't know about you,
but for most of us that have ever had to work with a psychiatrist, whether for ourselves, our loved ones, or in a professional capacity, you know what a gem Stacey is. I'm sure so many of us wish that we could have a doctor that has as gracious and open a stance, that builds in intentional time for talking and teaching, and really is rooting for you to be the driver, you to have the agency and more freedom to navigate your own life. So, Doc, you really are that unicorn, and we thank you so much for sharing your magic with us. So with that, fam, we are now to the intrusive thought segment of the show, which is the application segment of the show for any new fam joining us. It's that time where we take what we've learned together and figure out a way to apply it today. Okay, so I'm thinking about something Stacey mentioned earlier that I think would be just perfect for this. If you remember, fam, when she talked about, imagine you're on the best OCD medicine ever. How is your life going to be different 6 months from now? What are you looking for? Remember that part of our chat? And I know, fam, that everyone listening here has different scenarios going on. So some of you might be on meds already. Some of you were on meds at some point but are off now. Some might have an on-again, off-again relationship with medication support. Or maybe you're a never-medder, if you will. Either because you don't want to be on meds, don't like them, don't believe in them. Or you're not ruling them out, but you question whether it's even a need, or are you at that point that you have to be on meds? Would you even benefit from them? No matter where you fall on that line, I want us to zoom out a bit and broaden the question to this. Let's say you're living your best OCD treatment or recovery life. How is your life different 6 months from now? What are you looking for? And fam, I'm going to challenge you to actually write this down somewhere, whether you make a note on your phone, text it to yourself, grab a sticky note, or write it in your journal, or even dry erase mark it on your bathroom mirror. But I want you to write it down, externalize it, manifest it. If you're living your best life, your family's best life, what would be different 6 months from now? And try to make it specific. It can be as brief or as narrative as you please. There's no wrong answer. But then, fam, little part two, brainstorm and write at least two different ways you want to try and get there. So if I was living my best life 6 months from now, and I get it, some of y'all are like, a nuclear blast just went off in my life. I can't imagine anything being better 6 months from now. There. But if it were better, how would you know? What would it look like? And then I want you to write down at least two different ways you want to try and get there. For example, sometimes if someone is not jazzed about the idea of medication, but is like, okay, the brain, the neurotransmitters, endorphins, dopamine, whatever, they might say, okay, I don't want to try medication yet, but I'll try and adjust my diet or maybe exercise more. Okay, so write it down. For other people, maybe it's trying to protect getting those 7 to 8 hours of sleep that theoretically healthy people do. I'm sure it'd be amazing. For some of you, it might be reducing screen time or taking a break from news or social media. For you or your loved one, it might mean starting therapy. For another, it might mean wrapping up and graduating from therapy. For some, it might mean trialing a medication, or at the very least, being willing to have a conversation with a trusted provider about starting one. For others, it might mean trying to wean off. And for a lot of us, family, it may mean a return to more value-driven activities, to engage in meaningful pastimes, and have more engagement with each other than with OCD. And then I'm going to challenge you, fam, to put that note somewhere where you can see it. Maybe at the top of your notes app, maybe on your desk, maybe on the visor in your car. Sun visor thing you can put down when the sun's in your eyes. That way, you can remind yourself, keep it in your awareness that, hey, this is worth striving for. You, your loved ones, are worth striving for, family.
And I tell you what, I'm going to do it too, because I'm never going to ask you to do something that I'm not. I'm not going to be like, have fun with that. I'm going to do it too. And because nothing says family like having that one person at least going, did you do that? Did you do that yet? Did you do that? Right. I'm going to revisit this conversation in 6 months, fam. And when we get there, if we haven't found what we're looking for, then we're going to have a real conversation about what can we do to increase support. We tried it this way. We didn't make our goal. And if we didn't make our goal, what other supports can we add to help? Whether it's starting therapy, having the conversation about meds, starting meds, coming off of meds, planning those outings, because fam, there is hope. And you might have a plan in place that is working great. And in which case, I love that for you. Yes. But just in case that's not you, then look around, fam, because I guarantee you're not alone. I'm in this trench. A lot of us are in this trench, but there is hope. So let's do this together, because it can get better. Will it get to where our goal is? I don't know, but it can get better, and we can do this. So let's take it one day at a time together. Thank you for joining me and our OCD family community. If you enjoyed what you heard today, please like and subscribe to the OCD Family Podcast wherever you enjoy your podcasts. Did you find this content helpful? Please consider leaving a review. The more people that know they're not alone, the better. For more information regarding today's podcast, please visit OCDFamilyPodcast.com and remember to join the email list while you're there. It will provide you with the most up-to-date information, resources, and the download on the family chatter. Oh yeah, nothing says family like lowering our dread while talking about meds. That's right. I went there. And you can too at OCDFamilyPodcast.com.
Okay, clinicians, are you ready to transform your practice? Then mark your calendars for February 6th and 7th of 2025, because Dr. Pia Callison is presenting a two-day live virtual training on metacognitive therapy through OCD Training School. Metacognitive therapy explores the process of how we think about our thoughts, and it has shown to be helpful in treating OCD, depression, anxiety, and PTSD. Sign up today through my link at OCDFamilyPodcast.com/courses to support the podcast at no extra cost to you. So what are you waiting for? This transdiagnostic approach is ready to take your practice to the next level at OCDFamilyPodcast.com/courses.